What a wonderful person, what wonderful things you have done, without meaning it. You have to find something in that person. And she said one day, this woman told us, she said one day, a little boy was brought into my class, who was the most difficult child. And he was disturbing so much that the whole class was disturbed, the whole day. And she said, I looked at him, I tried to find out what good quality I can find in him, and I couldn't. There was no good quality that she could find to praise him, or to help him, to encourage him. I remember I said to him, well, couldn't you do something? Well, send him out of this school, out of the room for a while, if he's disturbing everybody. Oh, she said, if I do that, my relationship is ruined. It's no use. I cannot do that. I must find something. And she said, when we were sitting after a while, I noticed that, you know, all the children in school, most of them, when they sit, they stoop over their desk, you know, they just sit down like this, they stoop, and they are bending more or less. But she said, I saw that this fellow Billy is sitting straight. Now that was good enough to start him. So she said, she announced to the whole class, she said, I want all of you to look at Billy. You see how marvelous he is, how straight he sits? Now I want you all to sit like Billy. Now Billy had never heard anybody praising him. And now his eyes opened and he began to look around. He saw he became the center of attraction. Everybody looked at him. Everybody sat straight. Now, Billy becomes excited. He sits there. And he is no longer going to be difficult. And all the children, every session when they come in, the teacher reminds them, now don't forget, you all have to sit like Billy. And what Billy does, he is so excited about it, because everything he has been doing, everybody has been attacking him more or less of all the wrong things he's doing. Now he's going to find to do something else which is going to be good, so that the teacher might encourage him again. You see, this is a marvelous lesson. This is what our institutions really are doing and will be doing and should be doing, really, and ourselves. And I think that encouragement, I'm sure some of the believers who are discouraged and who are left alone, if you find them, anybody like that, if you find what good qualities they have and try to encourage that good quality and say to them that you can serve the faith in that way through this particular ability that you have that nobody else has, we will become excited and they'll come close to us. Now, as I mentioned, this question of loving each other and not trying to judge one another is very important. Because Shoghi Effendi, in one of his writings, he mentions this. He mentions that the function of the individual in relation to another individual is to love each other and to be compassionate and to be loving, but not to judge. Whereas he says the function of the institutions of the faith, the function of the local assemblies and the national assembly, is to apply justice. And when you apply justice, you cannot become compassionate. And Shoghi Effendi says, at the present time, it's the reverse. The individual Baha'is, when they come together, they judge each other and they act towards each other as if one is a local assembly, judging the other person and criticizing. And the local assemblies, when it comes to give, or the national assemblies, when they come to apply justice, they become compassionate. Every Baha'i has marvelous qualities, and we have to look into their faces and see those qualities of Baha'u'llah. I'll tell you another story, just to give you this. You know that sometimes there are difficulties in Baha'i communities, and there was a community in Europe, a Baha'i community, which had great personal problems, personality problems. You can never solve personality problems by expedient measures. You cannot solve it by expedient measures. And the only way you can really do it is to shower everyone with love. And anyhow, in my function, I was asked to go and see if I can help them. Well, there was a big file, which if I show you the size of it, it was as big as this, about this community, of all the problems they had with each other. That some of them even wouldn't talk to each other. If they saw each other in the streets, they would avoid each other. It was a terrible situation. And they said that it was obvious from reading these files. I decided not to read them, and at the end I decided it's no good to read them. But I knew there was one man who they said he was the culprit. He was the responsible man. He really was the man who has created all this terrible entanglement and problems for years. And people had gone there, national assemblies, members, all kinds of people, board members, gone there to try to solve it, and it became always worse, to such an extent that these people had a great prejudices against the institutions of the faith. It became very difficult. Well, I went along and I met with these people, not that man who was all the cause of the difficulties, but I met with all the others, and I found that they were beautiful Baha'is. Really and truly, they were just beautiful Baha'is. You couldn't see anything bad in them. Oh, marvelous. And we talked about it individually with everybody. And then I was afraid to go and see that man. I had to go and see him anyhow. That was the problem. And I reached to the almost to the door of this house. Before I ring the bell, it suddenly occurred to me very clearly that I am going there with the wrong feelings. You know, because I've read some of these files, it's no good. And I knew that this man must have marvelous qualities. Now, this story of disagreement, the story of this community is such that for years and years and years this has been going on. And it could not be resolved. And this man was obviously the source of all the problem. I have no doubt about it. This was in this file. You could see that. But I decided immediately before I rang the bell to really purify my motive. I couldn't go like this. That he has some good qualities. Of course he has. He must have. He's a Baha'i. After all, he is a Baha'i. That's great. That's good enough. So with that feeling, I rang the bell. Now, I can tell you that he and his wife were sitting there waiting for 2 or 3 days, trembling with fear of they're going to see the angel of death, or what's that what you call it? When he comes. They were frightened of what's going to happen now, you know. Well, when I looked at this face of this woman, I just looked at it, just as I'm looking at your faces, and this woman almost melted. And she went running to her husband. I could hear whispering, saying to her that he's not that bad, you know. He's not that bad at all, but we were thinking about it. Anyhow, this man came, and we sat down, and we embraced each other, and we sat down. And I thought, what a wonderful thing it is to meet another Baha'i, you know. And we talked about our experiences in the faith, of his services, what he has been. And we talked and talked about all the stories. We became so heated up with excitement. And he went in and he showed me all the years and years of service this man had. Of all the photographs of the friends in the old countries, in other countries that he has been, in other things he'd done. A very learned person he was. And we talked about the faith. We went into all some of the abstruse writings of Baha'u'llah, and he said something and I said something, and it took 3 hours. We were discussing these things. We became so much enthused. And then at the end of it, I thought, now I better say nothing about his problems. And I said, well, now I better go. I decided I'll leave it for some other time. I'll come back again tomorrow. And I was going to go. And you know what he did? He grabbed me. He said, all of this problem in this town is my fault. He said, everything is my fault. I hadn't said a word. He said, I want you to do something. He said, I want you to accompany me to go to the houses of the believers. Now, these are the people he wouldn't talk to. He wouldn't see them. He wouldn't ever. And he said, I want to prostrate myself at their feet and beg forgiveness. I hadn't said anything to him. We never entered the subject. And you know, we did that. He came along. We went up. We knocked on the doors, and people were startled to see him coming to the door of his house. And he literally, he prostrated himself. He cried and cried and cried. And the others cried and cried and cried. And then we went to somebody else's house, and the same thing happened. And in the evening, we gathered all the friends together after 2 or 3 years. And it was a crying meeting all the time. They were crying. And ever since, they felt so united, so happy. And then the faith grew in that town. Local people became Baha'is. Now you see, and we never said a word about what this man had done. We have to really genuinely, in our approach to people, is to see a trace of Baha'u'llah in every soul, in every face. All problems will vanish, I can assure you. This is how the faith works. This is the power that he has released for us. God, he has released this tremendous power. And this power is not for me or for you or for him. This power is for everybody. There is no exclusiveness here. Every one of us can draw from this power. Every one of us can attract him to ourselves. Well, we were talking about something different. You remember we were saying that to read the writings and to say our obligatory prayers is not sufficient unless we carry out the teachings of Baha'u'llah, obey his laws, and then to love one another. It's one of the most important teachings. And if we love one another, everything else will work out. And don't force yourself to love, but try to love. Try to see if there is any problem somewhere, to approach it in this way, that we all have to go from this life. You know this. We're not going to be here always. Every one of us will have to go. And this is not a place to enter into. These years that we are living here is not a place that we should try to judge each other and say, oh, this person is so irritating to me, or that person is so difficult. Now, here is where we have to turn to the writings and see what are the teachings of Baha'u'llah and do it for his love. He says, carry out my commandments. I'm paraphrasing the words of Baha'u'llah. Carry out my commandments for the love of my beauty. We do not carry out the teachings of Baha'u'llah because it's good for us. This is a very important point to remember. We don't carry out the teachings because, oh, if I carry out the teachings of Baha'u'llah, I am going to be wise, I'm going to be a good man, I'm going to be a very knowledgeable man. This is not the real motive again. Although at first when you become a Baha'i, naturally you see the teachings and you say it's marvelous to become adorned with all these characteristics and beautiful things that the faith has. But when you become a deeper Baha'i, you realize that you do obey the teachings of Baha'u'llah for the love of Baha'u'llah. This is a marvelous motive because you love him. Again, remember, when you love somebody, go back to nature, go back to life. When you love somebody, and you really love somebody, and I'm talking of real love, 100% love, when you really love somebody, you will not question what your beloved wants. You just do it because you love that person. You see? This is the real motive, the real relationship. Although, when you carry out the teachings of Baha'u'llah for the love of him, yes, all those things will be yours. You will become knowledgeable, you will become wise, you will become deep, you will acquire all those qualities, but you acquire it not because you wanted it at first, for yourself, for the satisfaction of yourself, but you've done it because you love him. Just as much as you, when your beloved asks you something in your life, whom you love very much, when he asks for something or she asks for something, you do it because of him or because of her. This is a good motive. This is a real love. Today, Shoghi Effendi has told us, Baha'u'llah has told us, Abdul Baha has told us, that not until we live the life in accordance with the teachings can our work of teaching become successful. This is another thing which is very important to bear in mind. Some of you have remembered that celebrated passage from Shoghi Effendi, which I haven't got it with me to read it for you, but I'm sure many of you who are familiar with it, this is a celebrated passage when he says, not by the force of numbers. Not by the force of numbers, not by a mere disposition of teachings, and not by an organized campaign of teaching, can you influence the people who are not Baha'is and bring them into the faith. I'm paraphrasing his ideas. He says, one thing and one thing alone. One thing and one thing alone. See how much emphasis he puts on it? And there is no other alternative. One thing and one thing alone, he says, which will bring people to the faith, is that each one of us act as mirrors. Mirrors. And we are always acting as mirrors, you know that. Every human being is a mirror of what is inside him. But he says we should act as mirrors which will project and reflect the teachings of Baha'u'llah in its purity, in its pure form. He says then it will influence others. And there are many stories, I'm sure you have heard many, many stories of such beautiful Baha'is who had lived this life in this way. And as they walk in the streets, they have been the center to which people turn to. Remember, Martha Ruth was one such person. I mean, she, wherever she went, people were attracted to her. I mean, this is part of our history. And this is not something that she was a very special human being. She was a human being. But she had an absolute connection with Baha'u'llah. She was connected fully to him. And this is what happened. And therefore she became a perfect mirror. What was in her heart reflected out in her face. And people saw that radiance and they were attracted to her. This is the way. And this is what Shoghi Effendi tells us. And this is why I said that the world, the forces are all over the world preparing us. We can bring great numbers into the faith if we do these things. And I'm sure that your community has been really in the forefront of teaching activities. We have to learn from you. Forgive me for saying these things. Your community has been so successful in teaching. At one stage, I remember they would say that 1% of the people of this country are Baha'is. And whenever we talk about Alaska, it rings such a marvelous community. And now I can say it is. It really is. It's a very beautiful community. You cannot see yourselves, yeah, because you're sitting there. But I can see this. It's marvelous. And this is not because of us. This is because of Baha'u'llah. He has given us all these marvelous powers. Now, time is coming, Mr. Chairman, to have a little break. When is your break? Now? I want to tell you now, having said all of this so far, we have talked about growing our faith. Our faith grows. We want our faith to grow. And we talked about it yesterday in great detail of the things we have to do. Not that I've said this, but what Baha'u'llah has said. Reading the writings and saying the obligatory prayers. And now we said about living the life. Living the life. But there is one thing that if we don't do it, really, really and really, this is real serious. If we don't do it, all these things will not be of any use. Even living the life would not bring up the results. And I will explain to you what it is next session. So, uh,